Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, Matthew Penny is in the building. Penny, what up, Ben?
Live from the living room. We got a home game today. I'm excited.
It's a home game. You're not in the office. You're not in the bathroom-tiled facilities that you've got in your office. So it's good to see. It's good to see inside the Penny home in suburban Boston.
Yeah, with the holiday cards off the wall, we've officially moved into 2022. 2021 is in the dust.
Oh, my God. So today on the show, let's just introduce it before we get going. We are doing a college basketball draft. So our idea here was if we had to win a game tomorrow, and by the way, you're going to be able to vote on these teams. So if we had to win a game tomorrow, Penny and I are drafting players that we would have on our team. So we're essentially creating teams of five starters, two backups or three backups?
Yeah,
I think
it's
remember
a two.
What we did. Two backups.
Well, it's a two. We do three. We're going to start dipping into 2.5 hour territory. Yeah.
And then we'll kind of talk about what our philosophy is throughout it, what our goals are as a team, what we're trying to do, what we're going to run, how we're going to play, etc. We're going to do that instead of like drafting a coach, basically. And then after that, we're going to do mailbag and we're going to do prospects of the week. So, yeah. Penny, before we get into that, the most important thing that we have to talk about is I've finally convinced you to start Yellow Jackets, which is like just so good.
Yeah, it was a two-prong attack because my buddy Elliot suggested it to me, said, have you watched Yellow Jackets? I haven't. I watched the preview. I said, I'm not really into like Alive meets Lost. You said the same thing, said you gotta check it out. So I did. I watched three episodes. It is one of those shows where you wish you could take the day off from work and just like watch eight straight more and be done. And we're recording here at 8 o'clock at night and we're gonna have a great podcast. I'm gonna give it my all. As soon as we hit record, I'm throwing the stuff on the couch, running upstairs and watching one more before bed. That's how hooked I am. It's absurd. I have no idea where it's going. There's a great soundtrack. I'm all in. I watched the first one. I turned to my wife. I said, I'm hooked. This was the right call.
So you are watching it with Jackie?
I am. And she's not normally into scary-ish movies, but it feels like one of these cultural-type shows where people, they've talked about it, but no pun intended, the buzz is growing. So you want to be part of that conversation, too.
Yeah, it's really funny how that happened. Like, it happened real quick with it. I felt like after 6 weeks or so, and Laura and I started catching up, I would say, like, right after episode 7 or 8, and we were like, okay, yeah, we just need to watch this, apparently. And, I mean, it's like, holy shit good. Everyone, seriously watch it. Like, it is so good. Who is your favorite character so far?
Christina Ricci so far. The younger version and the older version.
Yes. Like, just the absolute... I think it's one of my favorite performances of any, like, actor I've seen on TV in, like, 5 years. It's so good. It, like, that and all of the Succession characters. It's just all of them. They're all so good.
It's just so beyond absurd, too, but you feel like you're a part of the world, and I'm not going to do spoilers here because I'm three episodes in, so you know what happens, but it does do, like, the time jump back and forth. And I get excited for both. Sometimes you watch a show, you're like, man, we're going back in time again. Can we just do present day? But I like it. It gives you little pieces of their messed up pie of why they are the way that they are. And I know there's probably way more that's going to happen that you're biting your tongue about. So there will be text messages to come on this too. But definitely watch it. I knew I was into when the first song that hit was Smashing Pumpkins. Said, yeah, this is gonna be a thing for us in the Penny household.
Yeah, I looked at Laura and was like, this is going to be... That was the exact moment. I was like, yeah, this is going to be awesome. Okay, next week will be Yellow Jackets recap because there's no way you won't finish these last 7 episodes.
Well, we kind of have to because Ozark debuts Sunday.
So
there's a pecking order. We got to get to that. But I have to close that book before I get to the next one.
Okay. Let's just jump into drafting college basketball players and kind of set out a rule book here in terms of what we're going to do. So the idea here is literally have to win a game tomorrow, right? Like that's the goal. Have to win a game tomorrow, drafting players and drafting a team that works together. So like We're not just drafting like the five best wings. Although if you want to draft the five best wings because you think that's your your best bet to win, then do that. But like that's going to be the Raptors,
just 5, 6, 8 guys.
Yeah, Masai Penny over here. So that's the goal. I don't know what else do we have to say here? I feel like this could go long, so I just kind of want to dive in.
Yeah, we got seven guys. I think we kind of gave ourselves each a minute or two to explain the pick and why we did it.
Yep.
We have not shared lists. We have not shared here's our player pool, so this could go any of which direction. I think I'm probably more drafty type prospects, but I got a good mix and blend of guys here too.
Yep. Okay. Let's see. What do I have here to flip? Okay, I've got my iPad or my AirPods thing. Okay. My AirPods.
Flip an iPad. I don't think we make enough money yet for that.
I mean,
AirPods are good too, but
yeah, I love my AirPods. But like, I'm just literally flipping them in the air and dropping them on.
I might too, and I will not flip mine. So,
okay, so the front is the little dot thing that shows if it's shows if it's charging or not. The back is the button you hit to connect it. That's tails. The top tails is heads. Fails.
Button okay. Never runs. I'll go the button side.
Okay.
This is so ridiculous. Very appropriate for the show, okay. Too.
The button side has won. You get to go first. I don't really want to do, like, snake draft. Like, I just want to be able to go back and forth. So yeah, you can the first pick. That's fine.
Back and forth one at a time. So first pick. I thought I was going to the first pick because you had the first pick in the mock draft. But as Rasheed Wallace reminds us, ball don't lie. So I do get the first pick here. I have a little bit of an explanation, so this might come as a little bit of a surprise of where I ranked them on our mock we did the last episode. Yep. So we are also in a fantasy football league together. You won the championship this year. I'm in another fantasy football league that I won the championship. No big deal. I like diversifying my players. I don't like having the same in each league. So I took Johnny Davis in this league. So for my first pick, I am going with Jaden Ivey from Purdue. And
here's
why.
Fascinating.
I think he does a little bit of everything. I'm obviously a big supporter of wings and guys that can create, that can dribble, shoot, pass. He can get end-to-end faster than almost anybody. I watched that game against Illinois, and he didn't play well from the field, really. He was 3-for-10, but he got the free throw line 15 times. He knew if he kind of pushed the pace and got into the lane and then had really good body control of powering through Kofi Coburn for one of the takes, but knew that was his strength and that was the difference that his team needs. So we're going to build around a guy like that, shoots 40% from three, can defend, has these plays in space where he looks otherworldly. So he's the anchor of my team here to get going for the Penny All-Stars.
I love it. I think this is a really good pick because I don't know if you noticed, but I felt like a little bit questionable about the point guard position this year in college basketball. And so he was number two for me on my board. I was pretty in on Jaden Ivey. Unsurprisingly, I'm an enormous Jaden Ivey fan. I'm stunned that you didn't take Johnny Davis. Like I am completely blown away by that.
I think my explanation was I have him on my mock draft team. He was right there too. I'm just saying for this game right here, right now. Yes. I've argued that Johnny Davis is more of a production now and Ivy has more upside. I think I can build around with the other pieces I have coming up on the board with Ivy just a little bit better, but it was close.
Okay. I'm going to go Johnny Davis too. Yeah. Right. I mean, I want the half court shot creation that he brings. I think that in a draft where I think there is actually precious little half court shot creation, just kind of looking it through who's available and everything. I think that he's the one that I trust most to be able to consistently get those shots. On top of that, I want to build a really tough defensive team. And Johnny Davis is an awesome point of attack defender. And especially against college guys, he's pretty switchable, especially 1 through 3, even down to the 4 occasionally. To me, Johnny Davis is kind of the perfect guy to build a team around here. So I'm going Johnny Davis, Wisconsin, at number two.
Great pick. I liked it. I was hoping that he would slide, so I got to have both of them and build up all my guards. I've been known to not be a big friendly.
Time real quick.
Time taken.
We did initially in our text messages note. So we both took Big Ten guys here. we noted the idea that we might want to do no more than two players per conference. Do we want to actually do that?
We can. I mean, you're that we can do that. You're destroying my pick down.
Well, no, I'm open for discussion on this. Like, I thought it'd be a little bit more interesting to, more than anything, like, kind of wrap in, like, everyone, like, from the rest of the country, as opposed to, like, look, a lot of the top players are in the Big Ten this year, right? Like, there have been reports of, oh my God, this could be like a five-person All-American team from the Big Ten, from people who I think are wrong, but nonetheless. So I just want to, like, float it to you before we get too deep into this.
I have enough depth. It's your show. Whichever way you want to guide us, we'll go. We just went two from Big Ten, though. So are we saying no more than two per conference then?
Let's say no more than three per conference. Because we
got one more. We're alive. You're saying there's a chance. I like that. Yeah. That's good. Okay. I'm not going to take a Big Ten player with this pick. You probably panicked and thought that I would take my sweet love Keegan Murray. I'm not. I am going with a very switchable big that can shoot, that is a strong contender for the number one pick in the draft. I'm going with Jabari Smith from Auburn. And I like the way that he also gets up and down. He can play as fast as we want to with Jaden Ivey, while also slowing down when the court is shrunk to be a pick-and-pop threat, can shoot and stretch the defense, we can initiate a little bit of offense from him. The shot's not falling. We can throw him up at the top of the press. He can switch, protects the rim a little bit, playing with more of an edge lately too. And just as a little draft talk, the more you dig and the more people you talk to around him and not necessarily the coaches, all the things are he keeps getting better. The people even around him forever have said they didn't see this. They saw a really good player, a really good kid, could be an NBA contributor. No one necessarily saw the number one pick. Maybe his dad will tell you that. They said this kid just worked so hard, and now it's like all starting to click at the right time. So that's a good number two for my team here.
Yeah, no. So he was definitely on my list. He was definitely lower on my list than this. And so it will definitely go to show our different ideals in terms of how we're building. So this is going to be a really fun little thing. I love this pick with Jaden Ivey because they're both so athletic and you're going to be able to get up and down the court at a real level. Jabari has been awesome as a three-point shooter, especially in trailer situations. So I am I'm a fan of this. This is good from you, Penny. I'm in.
Good team. Okay.
At number four, I'm going to take another one of your sweet boys. Like, this is, it's going to be shocking when people look at this. They're going to think my team is your team based off of the guys I'm taking. I'm taking Oshai Agbaji at number four.
He was on there a few picks down, but he was on there.
So my, the thing that I noticed was I felt pretty good about the, and still feel pretty good about the bigs in this class, and the bigs across college basketball. I wanted real wing depth, and I wanted guards who I felt pretty good would be able to create shots in the half court, or in Agbaji's case, be able to run out and transition and defend and play switchable defense. Unsurprisingly, for people who know me, my goal here is to play as a very switchable defensive team. I want to be able to switch one through four and be able to create shots in the half court when the game slows down. So I've got Johnny Davis, I've got Oshai Agbaji, and I'm happy with the way my team looks to start.
Yeah, this is great. So I'm the
number. I took two wings. You took like a big and a point guard. This is interesting. This is very interesting.
And now we're at the fifth pick, right?
Yep.
So I'm gonna split the difference, and I'm gonna take Keegan Murray from Iowa. Yep. Kind of sort of the same vein of a switching, in my opinion, 3 through 5, leading scorer in the country. The 3-point shot's coming along well, so we can use him on off the wing. He can set screens, and we can even sneak Jabari in the dunker spot once in a while, put him flat out in the corner. Jaden Ivey can create. Also gets out well in transition. I'm building a juggernaut here with Jaden Ivey, Jabari Smith, and Keegan Murray. Couldn't be happier with my board. This is like the I put together my dream list of guys, and it's coming to fruition very early.
This is fascinating. Now I'm a little bit unsure what to do.
So that also means the Big Ten is done.
No. I'm saying three per team, not necessarily
Oh, Lord. Okay. No, so three total. The Big Ten is alive. I have two. Okay.
You're alive for the Big Ten.
You had me scrambling because I didn't have a ton of guards on here. I started looking at the ones on the list. I said, I better start looking some guards on my cell phone here so I don't go nuts.
You're good. Okay. What do I want?
We've yet to take, just as a quick peek here as you're looking, we've yet to take a guy sort of out of the lottery so far.
Yeah, and that's not going to change with my pick, I don't think. Okay, I'm going to take Chet Holmgren.
Ooh, okay.
Because I want elite level rim protection. I want, given the fact that you are as kind of big as you are with Keegan Murray driving and with Jaden Ivey driving, I want Chet around to be able to protect the rim. I think he is the best rim protector in college basketball. On top of that, along with Johnny Davis, along with Ochai, I have three shooters that I feel very confident in to be able to space the floor and play up and down basketball. Chet Holmgren, by the way, has been one of the best trailer three-point shooters in college basketball this season randomly. He can't make a shot in the half court for whatever reason, but coming off those trailer three-pointers, like, he's been unbelievable. So I love that. I love his passing ability, which I think I could actually use with Johnny Davis and Ochai Agbaji on this roster. I think that I needed some playmaking, which is why I defaulted toward Chet a little bit more than one of the other bigs that was available. So, yeah, I'm going Chet at number six.
Oh, I like that. I had him two more picks down. All right. I have a guy. So this is the seventh pick here. The next one on my big board, positionally, just doesn't match up with what I have. So I'm going to bump down a little bit. Yeah, so I need more scoring punch here. Just too good, and maybe this is a guy you draft and stow away on the bench and can be a fire starter off there. Sort of like you draft all your running backs early. If they don't play, they don't play. It's fine. I'm going to go with Benedict Mathurin from Arizona.
Yeah, the highest guy remaining on my board, but I didn't feel great about drafting him and then you having both Keegan Murray and Jabari Smith, because I think that they're both potential mismatch problems for three wings, essentially.
And I like the scoring from Ben Mathurin. I like it when he keeps it simple to want to do dribbles. We're going to try to play fast. He can run with us. He's great running wide in the break. He can spot for threes. He can quick rip through to dunk. He can hit opposite. The passing's getting a little bit better. Just too good of a prospect to win right now. He's been battle-tested. He's on a very good team in Arizona. So far I have Jaden Ivey, Jabari Smith, Keegan Murray, and Ben Mathurin. That's a good core four to get going.
Yeah, it is. I like it. Okay, I am going to go Paolo Banchero here, actually.
Yeah, it's a good team.
Yeah, I'm happy with what I've got. So Paolo is another one of these like big half-court shot creators who's kind of a mismatch nightmare. I actually think he's a mismatch nightmare for everyone on your roster so far, which is nice. On top of that, I have a roster that can all shoot around him with Johnny Davis, Ochai Agbaji, and Chet Holmgren, which will open up that mid-post area even more for Paolo. I think that I'm not going to be switching as much defensively as I would have liked maybe coming into this. But I think that Paolo and Chet inside is going to really, really make it difficult for your guys like Jaden Ivey and Keegan Murray to score.
Yeah, he is. And you could almost argue that if you're wanting to win a game right now, he could have been first. And people might be screaming, saying, how the heck did he last till eighth? And it's warranted, because if you built the team around him first, because he is such a self-creator from the mid-post and in the half-court, has toughness, will rebound. I could see people saying that he should have went a lot higher than he did, but a good fit pick for you here at number eight.
Okay. To recap here, let's just do like a quick recap for people following along. Team Penny is Jaden Ivey, Keegan Murray, Jabari Smith, and Ben Mathurin. Team Vicini is Johnny Davis, Ochai Agbaji, Chet Holmgren, and Paolo Banchero. You are up at number nine.
All right. I'm going a little bit outside the box-ish at number nine. Nothing crazy, but I want more of a little bit more ball handling because I can get bigs late. That's fine. I'm going to go. Wait, how many per team? One, two. Oh, no, I'm good. Okay. I'm going to go with Blake Wesley from Notre Dame. And I was afraid that I would not be able to take him. That's why I panicked when he said two per conference. Just a little bit more ball handling, a little bit more facilitating. Can score when you need him to, but has been playing that more lead guard initiator for Notre Dame. I like the balance he brings where he can go get one when he needs to. If not, we hit on one wing to Jaden Ivey. We have Ben Mathurin on another one. If we start small with Jabari Smith and Keegan Murray, just a lot of good offensive sets that we can do where we can maximize each of these guys' strengths. So my team is big but mobile. We can play many different styles. We don't have to be tied to one way or another. And also guys can play on and off the ball in Wesley and Ivey that can be interchangeable.
Okay. Yeah. Not someone that was on my board, but a good fit with your team. Like, I actually really like that because I think that you needed another ball handler next to Jaden Ivey, but Blake Wesley is one that actually makes sense, like, in a pretty substantial way. Okay, this is interesting now. I'm actually going to take a bench player next. I'm going Oscar Tshiebwe next.
Ooh.
And the reason I didn't think that I was going to take Oscar, to be honest, because I just kind of assumed that there would be other center skill sets that would match my team a little bit better.
Yep.
But in the case of Oscar, what I like here is that I think he fits exceedingly well with both Chet Holmgren and Paolo Banchero. While he would kind of, I guess, you know, make that mid-range area a bit of a problem for Paolo, I do think that his ability to get extra shots from the dunker spot would be really, really valuable. On top of that, again, I have a roster that shoots all around him. I think that pairing Oscar with Chet Holmgren would be, like, kind of disgusting. I don't know, like, how teams would manage that given Chet, or given Oscar's physicality, given Chet's rim protection coming over from the weak side. I can't really imagine a better, like, big man to bring off the bench than Oscar.
It's a true clash of styles. I'm going longer, leaner, running, and you just, if we count Chet as a big, you've kind of drafted three straight bigs.
I have. This is a weird one for me.
It is. I like it. All right, so where are we at? 11th pick here?
You're at number 11 here.
Number 11th, the sixth guy on my board. This is going to come as a little bit of a surprise, too. So I think we have our alpha dogs. Now I need a few pieces. I need a few pieces around all these guys that make them better. It's going to pass the ball. It's going to be able to set ball screens, come off ball screens. I'm going to take Jordan Hall from St. Joe's.
Yeah, I think I like this one. This is not bad.
The reason I do it is because he has played this super maximized role for St. Joe's, but with other types of pieces around him, he's not going to be asked to do as much. But when you're in a jam, the ball's not going to stick to him. He has very good vision. He can come off ball screens and go to, like, a weak side and pick and pop. If we need to switch up the coverage offensively and he has to step back out and handle the ball, he can do that too. Just some more offensive versatility to a team that is staying true to what we are, and we will not be hampered by guarding big ball screens with Oscar Tshiebwe and Paolo Banchero all game long.
Okay, so we're through, like, a lot of picks already. We're through 11 picks in 20 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. Do we want to extend these rosters out? Do we want to do, like, 8 or 9 picks as opposed
to
7?
We can do an eighth. That's fine.
Yeah,
I'm
let's
sure
do
we have 9,000 mailbag questions, but we can do 8. I don't know if I would have reached for Jordan Hall at this one, but it's okay. We're good. We're building a good bench. Strong base.
Okay. I'm taking someone that I'm not sure was actually on your board. I'm taking Colin Gillespie to be my point guard.
He was my fifth guard. Yep.
Was he? Okay. So I'm taking Colin Gillespie here because I noticed that on my team I don't have a ton of playmaking outside of Chet Holmgren. I don't have a ton of passing. I want someone who's going to be able to, like, really, truly set the table as a just smart distributor, guy that I know is going to be unselfish with the way that he attacks. Obviously, I also just want shooting. Like, I need as much shooting as possible on this roster. That's my main contribution here.
I like that. That makes sense.
Yep.
All right, so now I get my seventh pick, which I thought was my last pick, so I'm not. So I'm not going to take a kicker or a defense yet. I am going to take my version of a kicker, which would be a center, because I have a lot of fours, I got a lot of threes, so I'm going to go with a five. Yep. I want an athletic one that you are very high on lately. You already have one Duke guy, so I'm going to take one, and I'm going to go with Mark Williams.
I'm so sad that you took Mark Williams. Mark Williams was someone that I really wanted, but once I ended up with Chet and Oscar, it's kind of like that ideal combination that it was just a little bit tough to pass. There was just no way I could end up with Mark Williams, I thought.
Mark's just a guy that I like to say doesn't need the ball to impact the game. He can block shots. He runs the floor. He can play out of the dunker spot. He'll roll hard out of ball screens. Just make a difference in the paint. We need a different look, too, when we need to play defensively a little bit better and protect with Oscar and Paolo. He's a guy that we can have next to Jabari Smith, or even when we play Keegan Murray up the lineup to the four, play those two guys together, too.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, I'm going to take EJ Liddell at number...
I like that one.
What are we up to? I think we're up to 14.
That's your seventh pick, yep.
Yeah, and just to make sure, no, I'm good in terms of conference alignment as well. And you are too.
Okay. I think so.
Yeah, I'm going to take EJ Liddell. I like the idea of having another good defender off the bench. Neither of my bench players I really feel confident can shoot. EJ's okay as a shooter, but with the amount of shooting that I have in the starting lineup, I feel great about it, and I feel confident that I'm going to be able to get the shooting I need whenever my bench players are in. As much as anything, though, I felt like I needed another body to match up with guys like Keegan Murray and Jabari Smith as these kind of mismatch problems that you have in your front court with this roster. I'm going to be fascinated to see what your plan is in terms of who you're going to start, because this could be like...
Depends on the bye week.
Yeah, this could be a little weird roster that you have here.
Great chemistry, though. Great coaching. Everyone's buying in. It's culture. It's like that... that Jordan Sperber video he made in the offseason like 2 years ago, where every press conference said, "We're going to play hard. Yeah. We're going to run fast. We're going to have a great culture." That's us. That's the Penny All-Stars.
I love it. Okay. You are up with your final pick, Penny.
So my final pick, my last three or four are kind of not anti-drafty, but not necessarily who I view as the top prospects, fit prospects. So I also need a shooter. So I'm going to take a shooter off the bench. We need to spread the floor a little bit more. I'm going to go with Adam Flagler from Baylor.
This is a wild pick.
I don't think so, because I'm looking at my shooters here, and like Hyung Jung Lee was like another one I had to spread the floor. Yeah. Maybe Johnny Juzang, maybe Jaime Jaquez. He's a little bit smaller at 6'3", where I have a lot of these bigger type guard wings that have to guard up. I need somebody who can guard down the lineup a little bit. Shooting 39% from three, had six threes about two or three games ago, five the game before. So we can bring him in 10-15 minutes a night as a floor spacer to knock down open shots. I had a couple other type of like connectors, but I feel like I checked that box with Jordan Hall. So he's a shooter that I need on this roster to provide just a little bit more balance.
Okay. Because you took someone that we're going to be talking about later on this episode, I think I am also going to take someone that we are going to be talking about later on this episode. I am going to take Iverson Molinar as my guard.
Wow, okay.
Iverson Molinar is, for my money, like I can't imagine a better bench guard to have to come in and create instant offense. He is one of the best pick and roll ball handler creators with his handle and with his ability to just go out and get a bucket that you'll find in college basketball. He was what, I think like 50, 44, 85 last year. The yeah. 3-point shot isn't falling yet for him this year, but I don't really have any doubts that he can shoot given the fact that he's shooting 89% from the foul line right now. Has really improved as a distributor throughout the course of this year. Literally, I think like you look at the rest of that Mississippi State roster, Garrison Brooks has not been great. DJ Jeffries has not been great so far. He is just like carrying them toward a potential NCAA tournament berth. And that is something that I am surprised that we can realistically say about this Mississippi State team. So I'm going to go Iverson Molinar here as my bench
last
card.
Last pick. That was your eight.
Yep.
I'm interested the Vegas line. I mean, we're going to throw it to votes here and see who has who. I'm interested in the Vegas line of what the spread is for this game, too.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. Because you have a very – so what is your kind of – what is your vision for your team? So let's run through the team here. Team Penny. Jaden Ivey, Blake mm-hmm. Wesley, Ben Mathurin, Keegan Murray, Jabari Smith, Mark Williams – Jordan Hall, Adam Flagler.
Oh, I like it. Usually when I like my fantasy draft, when my team stinks, so I really like this one, so I'm sure I'm going to lose by about 100 votes here. Our idea is that, yes, we want to play fast. We want to play hard. We're going to make yep. shots. I like the size and the length. We didn't go full Raptors here with all 6'8 guys, but there's going to be some lineups out there. If you go with Jabari Smith and Keegan Murray, and a longer guy like Jordan Hall when you go big. If you want to go a little bit smaller with Flagler and Jaden Ivey, then you don't forget about Ben Mathurin, who I took fourth overall. So we're going to score a lot of points. We are going to play some defense and defend. That's why I took Mark Williams. And that's why I took Jabari Smith so early, too, because he can do kind of both of those things for me.
Okay. So Team Vicini here is Colin Gillespie, Johnny Davis, Ochai Agbaji, Paolo Banchero, Chet Holmgren, Oscar Tshiebwe, EJ Liddell, and Iverson Molinar. My goal here is I wanted to play switchable defense coming into this thing. I don't really know that I'm necessarily going to be able to do that. I have elite level rim protection with Chet Holmgren. I have great floor spacing with Colin Gillespie, Johnny Davis, Ochai Agbaji, Banchero and Holmgren, and Iverson Molinar. I feel good shooting as well. In that starting lineup with Gillespie, Davis, Agbaji, Banchero, and Holmgren, I have a ton of space for Paolo to operate out of the mid-post. I have a lot of space for Johnny Davis to operate out of the mid-post. I have a really good transition player in Ochai Agbaji. I have a really great transition shooter in Chet Holmgren. I have Oscar to just kind of come in and provide 15 to 20 minutes off the bench. I have EJ Liddell to come in and just kind of
50 to 20 rebounds. I'm like, that's possible too. He does.
That's
do that.
Possible too, man. Like I wanted some toughness and some extra possessions there with Oscar. And then with EJ, I've got just another big body to kind of match up. That's mobile enough with Keegan Murray and Jabari Smith. My downfall could be guard play. I would say. I don't feel awesome about Molinar and Gillespie in comparison to Jaden Ivey and Blake Wesley, but you know, it's okay. I think I feel good about where we're at outside of that.
Yeah, your team reads a little bit more like the college All-Americans too. I mean, not that you didn't go off a little bit with some of those guys, but more the mainstreamish type guys. Where I dug a little bit deeper with Jordan Hall and Adam Flagler, but I saw them as pieces. Some of the other guys just on the cutting room floor who I liked but just didn't fit. And this is like the second tier. After you get those like first four starters, I had Harrison Ingram there, just similar, just can pass it and do a couple different things. I had Darion Sebron if we need some more pressure on the rim, if we need some more stuff downhill. Even a guy like Adonis Arms.
Would have been a really good fit with your roster. Darion Sebron.
Yeah, I thought I might need a little bit of more shooting. I listed the shooters, and I don't like going too traditional big, and that's why I shied away from Tshiebwe. I also really liked Walker Kessler, but I thought it would be weird if I had Walker Kessler and Jabari Smith, because he was going to be a last pick, another guy that's like averaging 4 blocks per game. The shot's coming around a little bit and just makes his impact and his presence felt. And you don't have to throw it to him in the post in order to keep him happy. Like he finds different ways to kind of leave his fingerprints all over the place.
Yeah, no, I like that. I think that those are a lot of the names I had. I had Kofi Coburn. I had Trayce Jackson-Davis. I had Trevion Williams from Purdue on my board. I had Tari Eason on my board.
Yeah, Tari up there.
I had Isaiah Mobley, who has like quietly put together one of the best seasons in the country. I just took too many bigs. Like there was no way that I could end up with Isaiah Mobley. I drew Timmy. Neither of us like even have really mentioned Timmy. It's just that he's a very specific kind of player that neither of us were going for in terms of like our roster construction.
Right. Yeah, he just didn't fit with what I was looking for. A guy I want to just talk about here as we digress for a second. Did you have Kendall Brown on your board?
No.
Does that say anything about where Kendall Brown's stock or where he is currently in the eyes of NBA people? Not necessarily us, but it seems he's kind of piled up more of these 4-point, 5-point games. Yeah. Defense has been pretty good. But we just rattled off 16 guys that we think could win a game right now. We just also rattled off about another 10 to 15. So we're talking about a guy, realistically, that's going to need some development, that's going to need reps, probably in the G League. So at this time right now, how high are you kind of comfortable with taking him? Because start of the year off the board, then he's at 7, now he's kind of like, I don't know, 10 to 14 ish. Is that still a fair range for him as a prospect?
Yeah, when I've talked to teams, I've gotten like 10 to 20 for the most part now. More, you know, some teams do not see him as a lottery guy just because they're worried about the production concerns, kind of like you're outlining. Some do, because they see him as a project worth investing in from an athleticism perspective, from a play hard perspective, from a feel perspective. It's going to be hit or miss with Kendall Brown for sure.
I'm looking up now. He's been single digit scoring the last 5 games. Rebounds are all down. The last 5 or so games, it's like 5 points, 5 rebounds, and defense has been okay. I mean, he's kind of hit, I don't want to say the freshman wall, but it's just a little bit of a lull. Baylor is still good. They've lost 2 in a row to Texas Tech at Oklahoma State. Before that, they were rolling. They got to get back on track. But I thought the offense would kind of get there more. And we talked about it last week, how he had 10 assists the second game, and we haven't seen as many offensive facilitating type flashes lately either.
Yeah, like you mentioned Adonis Arms, like as someone that was on your board more than Kendall Brown.
Yeah.
I think I would trust Adonis Arms to help me win a game more than Kendall Brown right now. Which says something about how big of a project he is.
Right, exactly.
Okay, let's take a quick commercial break. Remember, we're going to put out a poll. I'm probably going to make Penny create a graphic of some sort so that we can figure out who won this thing. And then we will be back. We'll be back with Mailbag and with Prospects of the Week. Okay, we're back. It is time for Mailbag. We did not do Mailbag last week because we did a mock draft that lasted 2 hours. I'm surprised that Penny even came back after that.
We always come back.
So let's dive into some questions. So I've sent you some of these in advance.
A couple. I like the ones off the cuff, but some of them take a little bit of preparation. We're sharp. Yeah. We're prepared. We're not that prepared.
My favorite question that we got was from Lacro Rear One, Aiden. We'll go with that. In your years covering the draft, what was the most surprising out of left field pick that you can remember?
You want me to go first?
I can go first if you want me to go first. I have like an obvious pick for me.
You do? Okay. I do too, but I didn't know. I just wanted to do the chivalrous thing and let the host go first if he so chooses to.
You go first.
Georgios Papagiannis, not close.
That was number one.
When he went 13th to Sacramento, and here's why it is for me. A lot of these times.
Like,
Well, a lot of these times it's foreign guys that I just haven't seen like a ton, and you just kind of trust the numbers. You trust the international scouts and draft community because you watch a little bit on tape, but you don't see guys in person. So if somebody's overseas averaging 6 points per game, it's like, all right, whatever. If the scouts have seen him, he's all consensus there. He was different in that he went to the Westtown school in Pennsylvania for a year as a junior, and we were recruiting him to Reebok camp, and it's kind of like, this guy's fine. Like, he'd be like an okay big to have. And the joke we always made was like, come get dunked on. Like, we'll get a 6'10, 6'11 guy. Mm-hmm. And then we had Zach LaVine and Keith Frazier and all these like crazy athletes that good luck playing defense on those guys in camp settings. Yeah. He didn't come. He played on a different circuit. But the games that I saw in the film that I saw, just like really stiff, really rigid, didn't move well. I almost like forgot about him. And then I saw a few places he was a second round pick, and I was watching the draft and he was picked, and I said, oh my God. And he was basically out of the league in 2 years. I just didn't understand that one at all.
I have no idea how that happened. Like, I just don't. I had him, I think, at like 40 or so. Like, oh, something so like that.
Even, you were even like in the weeds of like doing the mock drafts and at this time too. So he was like,
yeah, oh no, yeah, I was
35 spots off in the first round.
Yeah, no, he was. It was not even close. That was a look, like, the Kings do weird shit. So like, you always have some potential expectation that there could be weird shit coming from Sacramento. Right. I never saw a guy that was a first round pick when I saw him.
I didn't get it either.
I mean, there's just no way. The other one that I'll mention, I was surprised when Thon Maker went 10th to Milwaukee.
Yeah, I was too.
That was one that like genuinely really, it didn't like blow me away. Like, I wasn't like nearly as surprised as Papianis going there. I understood the pitch for it. I never really like got it. Like, I've never really been a Thon Maker guy. I think that the problem with Thon was like almost a branding issue as much as anything. Like, you'd watch Thon Maker by the time he was like in his last year of high school, and it was like, no, this guy is like a defensive player who plays hard and is like a good rim protector who can switch. Like, he's not really the ball handler, highlight mixtape savant that people think.
Right.
And like, those guys go in the 20s and 30s somewhere. So yeah. Thon Maker was one that really surprised me as well.
He played on Under Armour circuit late with Ken Elite, so I saw Thon a lot, and he was one of these guys who, when you're around for that long, I mean, he was like an internet sensation as, I don't know, a seventh grader and eighth grader. It seemed like he was in high school for like 8 years. So I'd seen like a lot of Thon. I didn't think he was a top 10 pick. Like, when he had it on, the switch was on, he's hitting shots and running and playing hard, sure. I always had some like feel concerns with the way he kind of attacked and defensively and made reads. That was pretty high. If somebody took him like 30th and it was a project, sort of like we're saying, as a guy who just needs to get reps, he was still the D League at the time, not the G League yet, sure. But that was pretty ambitious.
Okay. From Chucking Darts.
We love Chuck. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I am going to echo Draft Deeper, Nathan. Shout out Nathan. I just hopped on his podcast this week.
Nice.
Who both mentioned Christian Brown from Kansas. And Chucking Darts says, because I actually like him more than just first rounder, I think he has a sneaky lotto case. So I guess I'd ask, do you like Brown's shot more than Marjon Beauchamp? If so, why have Marjon higher? Okay, so I'm not a Christian Brown guy as a first round pick.
Can I take a 20?
Yeah, go ahead.
He just hit a game winner from three.
Good for him. Great. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Like, which is good. But it also plays into our data points thing. So he hit a game winner from three. Doesn't mean he's a 3-point shooter, but he had to go ahead three with 11 seconds left tonight.
Yeah. Like, what worries me, like, how much do we really buy him as a shooter is like what I'm struggling with. So he's at 32% this season. He was sub 35% last season. Here, pulling up the numbers, he was at 33% last season. A lot of his numbers come in transition. Like, you look at the stats in terms of his points, a lot of them come in transition, and he's not like the kind of guy that's driving transition play. Right. Like, he is just getting to the basket and finishing in transition, like filling lanes and taking a pass and scoring. So I don't know what he does in the half court if he's not like an elite level shooter. I think the shot, in terms of the mechanics, I mean, you probably have the same concerns I do. Like, it's a low release point. It's kind of a dip. Yeah, it's a funky looking shot. Like, I think it actually takes him like a little bit longer to get off than typically these guys that are like floor spacers have. Like, I think it actually takes them that extra split second to like load into the shot.
Yep.
In terms of his defensive ability, I have some real worries about his lateral quickness. I don't know how well he's going to stay in front of NBA athletes on top of that. Like, I know he's listed at, what, 215, 210, something like that.
6'7", 215. Like,
heavier than what you would think he would be listed at just looking at him. But, like, I don't know. Like, do you think he's going to be able to hold up, like, at the point of attack against guys just kind of going through him? It feels like he is weirdly, like, I don't know. Like, do you think he has like high hips? Like, it feels like there's like something that allows guys to A, blow by him because he can't get moving quick enough, and B, like kind of go through him at times as well. So,
right.
Like, as a second round flyer, if you really buy into the jump shot, I do understand it. And like, I have a very comfortable two-way grade on him, and I get it in terms of this being like a good, interesting sell, but like, yeah, I'm nowhere near lottery on him.
I currently have him, I'm looking at my board, I currently have him at 31. I don't really know what to do with him because he did come out of the gate so hot when he was shooting like 60% from the field. And he's still like 52, I don't know about the game tonight, around that range, which is still no slouch. The 33% from three does scare me a little bit because there's some guys who they shoot and they miss, but it still looks right. It's like just rims out, yeah, and the form's great, and it's really simple. There's not a lot of shooting motion to it. Like, every Jabari Smith shot, I think, is going in because it's just so natural, so fluid. With Christian, it's a catch, it's a dip, it's a little bit of a crank. It's I know you can, like, remove that one step, and maybe that pays some dividends. But then it's also like everything else. I mean, the game was on behind me here with Oklahoma. It took one pass to the wing, a cut, and he was already burnt. Then the second defender had to step up. It was dropped off to Tanner Groves for a bucket. Laterally, I'm not there. I'm similar to you. The thing that I prefer with Marshawn Beauchamp, to kind of like tie the bow on this, is he's so active away from the ball. And I think some of what people see in Christian is also having that type of game where you don't need the ball in your hands. But with Marshawn, it's more of this like twitchy away from the ball. Like, there's a shot at the rim, and he beats his guy that can't box him out, and he catches it and rebounds. He flashes the high post. It's not there. It's a ball fake. He cuts, finishes, and dunks. I don't know necessarily if Christian moves that way. I do like him as a player. I just don't see the lottery thing unless somehow that shot gets up there that, I don't say makes up for everything else, but would kind of push the rest of the skills over the top. Does a lot of things well. I'm just not totally sold. I think his stock's a little bit higher than what I have him at.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, I'd even have him lower than what you do, to be honest. It's just like a skill package that isn't for me, even though I understand the sell, I guess, is what I would say.
Yep.
From Tall Greg, Votary of Hoops, might be a little late here, but what's your take on Azolis Tubelis and Fardaz and Mac? Thanks, fellas. I'll take this. Tubelis is a lot more interesting to me than AMAC. I've actually like watched a decent amount of Utah Valley because of him. I literally bet on Utah Valley this weekend where he dropped like 27, 18, and 4.
Because they play at weird hours, probably.
Well, it was because Cal Baptist had like 7 scholarship players. Including
you can't miss a Taron Armstrong game, even if he's not in it.
Well, yeah, Taron didn't play, and they were missing like one of their two of their backup bigs, and like everything. I was like, okay, AMAC's going to go off, and he did. Like I said, he had like 27 and 18. Like he was effective, but I don't really see it. Like just in terms of athleticism, lateral quickness. Like I get that he's a pretty coordinated, balanced athlete, but I think that he's just a significant liability in space in the NBA. There's just no way that's going to work, I don't think. Tabellus is more interesting to me, like a more fluid athlete. I think he has a better chance to shoot than AMAC does. More skilled, like a better passer.
Had a 30-point game this week.
Yeah.
Gets up and down
The other thing with AMAC that I'll mention too is you look at his numbers over the years, like his true shooting percentage is more in like the 52% range because he misses a ton of shots around the basket. Like misses just a ton of little bunnies that aren't like that he should make. Like you should have that kind of touch to be able to make that, to play the role that he needs to play in the NBA. I do think Tabellus has some of that touch. I would say Tabellus has a better shot. I don't know where I'd have Tabellus ranked, somewhere around like 60. Like, I think he's like a reasonable draft pick this year for sure.
Yeah, I don't have any strong take. I don't have Tabellus on my board right now because I don't know what kind of he's at for status. I mean, we're fans of Ben Mathurin over here. We've talked about Terry a little bit. We've talked about Christian Coloco. So I don't want to say he gets lost in the shuffle when you're having 30-point games in the Pac-12. But I think I'm just kind of similar to you, not totally there yet.
Okay, this is a quick answer. Do things like Jaden Ivey and Ja Morant have similar hair ever slip into draft evaluations? No. Tyler J. Petty.
I think you can just like a little bit because not all the time, but when he hits the nitrous, when he hits the turbo, the Fast and Furious, and takes off, and you see the hair, you think maybe just like a little bit, but that's just like the bias of seeing Ja Morant do it. I mean, still, I won't say very different players, but different players where Ja's so heavily on the ball, and you and I can have our disagreements about whether we see Jaden Ivey doing that or not, but I don't necessarily. Ja Morant's a superstar. I think Jaden Ivey's going to be a very good player in the NBA for a long time. I just don't necessarily see his ceiling as high as that.
Well, look, there's like a literal chapter in a Michael Lewis book featuring like Daryl Morey about how, like, for years in draft analysis, people would look at like Seth Curry and look at like little shooter with light skin who would come in and be able to make shots, and people would then like take that as a bias that they would take into draft evaluations.
Right.
And I believe it's called The Undoing Project is the book. And look, like I just don't get into that world. Like I just do not get into that world of that bias. And that's just kind of where I'm at. Okay, let's go with this last one here from our king, Andrew Schlecht.
Best of the best.
Just the absolute best human. It just left me. Okay. Who is the player being mocked in the 20s that will end up as a lottery pick? I love this because this is an exact conversation that I had last year with an NBA GM. And he asked me, like, look, if you were picking in the 20s, like, who would be the guy that you would take right now? And I said, Chris Duarte. I'd be like, look, he's going to come in. He's going to make an impact immediately. I get that there are upside questions, but he's a shooter. He defends. Like, he does all that. And lo and behold, Chris Duarte ends up at 13, right?
And good. And producing. And productive. He's been what we thought he would be. And the player prospect, it wasn't this, he's older, it's never going to work, it's an average 6 points per game. He's been what was billed as.
Yeah. So who is the prospect in this class that is currently slated for the 20s that will rise into the lottery?
I have a couple, and it's hard because this guy just had 0 points with about 12 minutes left to play. But I'm still, and you drafted him early, but I think Ochai Agbaji is going to rise up as time goes on. The reason is Kansas is good. They're going to keep being good. They're going to play in more marquee-level games. I think people will get past the age thing a little bit where he's averaging 20 points per game and doing it consistently and still stuff that he can improve on to get better. If we're going younger, so it's my older pick for younger guys, I think by draft time, Blake Wesley gets there too. Just the way he can get his own for the mid-range, the way he can rip through quickly off the bounce, the way his game is still blossoming as we're watching in real time, he's going to be right around that range. I know he's creeping up, so that's not like a super hot take, but I do see him kind of going like right there at 12 or 13.
Yeah, look, it's hard on some level because I tend to be like, look, I'm someone who does this, right? Like, mm-hmm. I guess that, like, I'm the person, like, making the mocks, you know? So, like,
that's true. You have the answers to the test, and you have to make the test. So if you mock them there, that's the truth, right? You can create your own narrative if you want to.
Yeah. So, like, in terms of... Do people have Ochai in the... Look, I've had Ochai, like, in the lottery for a while now. Like, in, like, that I late lottery
places,
range.
I think most places don't. I think I said he was 10th. I think you had him kind of, like, 12th or 13-ish. Definitely haven't seen a single digit next to his names, but everything I've seen is more that, like, 15 and comfortably in the 20s. Some places, like, later in the first, like, 25.
Yeah, and, like, every team that I talk to has him 10 to 20. Something like that. Like... I don't know. I mean, if people have him in the 20s now, I think that's an answer. But I'll transition this into prospects of the week because I think there is one other guy that I'm intrigued by.
Spicy. I like it. I know where you're going with this.
Who I think could end up there. So the game theory, NBA draft prospects of the week. I will go first because it fits in with the previous question. My prospect of the week is Mark Williams out of Duke. Mark Williams, I think, has a real shot to go in the lottery. I'm saying this now.
Lottery. Wow. Oh, I like this.
He is 7 foot tall. He has a 7 foot six wingspan, and he has a real case as the best rim protector in college basketball. It's him. It's Walker Kessler. It's Chet Holmgren, in my opinion. I think Jalen Duren is like a little bit below these guys in terms of skill set. He is an unbelievable rim protector, and he has real legitimate NBA tools in terms of length, in terms of strength, in terms of positional size. He is an elite level rotator. He is great in drop coverage. He is just constantly there contesting and swatting shots away at the rim. On top of that, I think that they don't even get the best out of him as a rim protector or as a rim runner offensively. Mm. Like
the Penny All-Star as well.
Yes, you will, because you have Jaden Ivey. His points come from him running the floor because, oh, by the way, like he sprints the floor every time. He's a really, really good transition athlete who can get out on the break. And then on top of it, like they just don't have any pick and roll guards. Like Wendell Moore is a good passer in the run of play. I think that Trevor Keels is like getting a little bit better as a pick and roll playmaker at the college level. But like they don't have anyone that consistently hits him like getting downhill on ball screens out of lobs. And I think that NBA teams are going to look at him and go, oh shit, we have Trae Young, or oh shit, we have Luka Doncic. Can you imagine, like, with the space that NBA teams have, we're just going to be able to rim run him to the basket and get him 8 points a game for free?
Yeah. I'm not making this A to B comparison. That's what I kind of thought with Kai Jones. It's just taken longer because he's
Hold on, he's so much better defensively.
I just mean in terms of running as fast as you can from end to end and catching and dunking. That just hasn't happened. He spent more time in the G League. So you're shooting a little bit of a shot here, a half shot. So I'm going to crank up the heat here. Over, under 2.5 Duke players in the lottery.
Okay, I'm going to say under for this because
It'd be AJ, Paolo, and Mark, if you think Mark's lottery pick.
Yeah.
Got the pretzel going now.
Yeah, my brain is now fried. I'm still going to say under, but I don't feel good about it. Like, I think that there is like a pretty real chance on it. Yeah, I would not put money on over. Like, you'd have to give me 3-1, I think. To go over under 2.5.
So I do want to, before I get into my prospect of the week, I also just an aside is that you still, we're talking Duke. I just want to talk AJ Griffin for 1 minute here. We're good. Yeah. So he's played better, right? Certainly played better, and the whole world lets you know about it when he plays better, right? He had 20 points, he had 15 points. He should be a top five pick. He's third. I would take him first.
Yeah.
He had 3 points. He was 1 for 6 the other night, and that's okay. I'm just saying it's like part of the story, and I feel the same way about your Prince, who you called, and it was a great shot. You called Ty Washington. He was awesome against Georgia. He was awesome against Tennessee. I also just want to say, like, that doesn't make him, to me yet, like a top seven guy. It doesn't make AJ Griffin go down. Yeah. If we're screaming out the good, screaming out the bad, just, like, try to keep it balanced, and it's not live and die by one game. We learn about it all the time, and Summer League is what drives me nuts about the most, because I love Summer League. I love all these rookies playing and playing well. If a guy rolls out there and has 20 points, it doesn't mean he's even going to, like, make the full roster. So it's... Right. I use this too often, but we're like halfway through our story. We're not at the end. AJ Griffin could be a top five pick. Ty Washington could be. The draft is wide open, but we can't have these wild swings from game to game. You do it for 5 or 6 games in a row, let's have a real talk about it. But if it's a blip for a game or two, we just got to see more. It's still early in the year.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. Like, look, like I'm someone who had Ty at number 7 in the preseason,
no question.
Or like number 8. And like I've been in on him from the jump, but like Matt's right. Like if you are lower on Ty and you have been through this process, like look, like you maybe should push him up a little bit. Like I'm sure Matt has like pushed him up into like that was 15 to 18 range as opposed to 18 to 22, right? Yeah, but perfect. Like, you know, it's see more evidence before you dive all in, right? And I think that, like, look, it's something that, you know, on that Draft Deeper podcast with Nathan that, you know, I talked about is just like, or that even he mentioned was like, look, for NBA teams, like, they're going to have more questions that need answered before they take guys than someone on the internet is when they just, like, anoint someone, right? Absolutely. And that's okay, like it's part of the internet process, right? But like AJ Griffin has significant injury questions that NBA teams are going to look into, yep. Right? All of these injury questions are public. Like it's not like they're unknown
revealing any doctor's stuff from pre-draft. Like this is all real, well known. He's out of the preseason, missed his junior year, all that stuff,
right? So yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to see where AJ Griffin falls. I think that he has a very wide range. Like he could go anywhere from 5 to 20, probably.
I think both of those guys could. It's fair.
Yeah,
because I forget who Kentucky plays this week, but they could go play at Auburn. Good or bad? Like if Bruce Pearl and Auburn,
they play Auburn on Saturday. So yeah.
If they turn up the press and he turns it over, I'm not going to say see. He was 18th. That was right. That's just another game. Right. And you base that versus LSU, versus Tennessee. They're really good. Are the guards defensively with Kennedy Chandler and Santiago Vescovi and Justin Powell, those guys as strong as maybe Eric Gaines from LSU or somebody like that? So there's still a ton of moving pieces.
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. So with that being said, Penny, you're up with your game theory prospect of the week, who, by the way, was my number 2 prospect of the week. So I'm so glad that you picked him.
That we drafted. And this is a true prospect of the week. It's Iverson Molinar, 6'3 guard from Mississippi State, who Sam also drafted for Team Vecini. So we know how much he thinks of him. Well, I say it's a true prospect of the week. He had 28-7-3 against Georgia. Followed that up with 24-6-4 against Alabama since we last recorded. He's averaging 18-4-4 in the year, which is pretty much the same he was as a sophomore. I really like his balance and his body control with how he plays. He's awesome on a pick and roll. Million ways to beat you, whether it's change of pace, whether he snakes the ball screen, does blow bys. He goes really quick, then hits the brakes for pull-ups without falling over himself. He knows how to stay with his own 2 feet grounded, and then he hits some really tough shots. That game against Alabama, he hit some backbreakers, and he was being shadowed by Keon Ellis for a lot of the game and Javon Quinterly, and so it wasn't one of these prospect performances where it was a lower level of competition. The game plan was to slow him down, and they couldn't. And you add on top of that he can finish in the paint, and he shows off that vertical pop and transition, a couple of those wild plays a game where he cocks back and has a tomahawk and gets the crowd involved. And then when he has a guy on his hip and he gets in the lane, he also has different like release points. So he's not just going to flail. Like he knows how to adjust his body to what's there. You talked about the 3-point percentage. It has dipped down to 30%. He was at 37 and 44 as a freshman soft, so kind of all over the place. It is a slow release. Well, and
yeah,
and
like I'll give you the career numbers here too. 38.2% on 200 3-point attempts throughout the course of his career. 82.2% from the line on about 250 attempts from the free throw line.
And sort of pulling this team and his teammates and willing them to victory just has to be mentioned more as a second round-ish draft candidate. There's not a ton of high-level guards, and you just take notice of it when he shows up on your radar with two big games and performances like that.
Are we sure he's not a first-round pick?
No. I'm not. I'm not sure. That plays into why we're able to do this every week is because so much changes from game to game and, I don't know, from conference play to the tournament to everything else. If he continues this type of streak, the shot's going to have to get better. It is. I mean, he's 6'3". He is quick with the ball in his hands, but if he's only as good at that ball screen now because of how fast he is. When the coverage constantly changes and consistently changes the NBA to go drop coverage and dare him to shoot, he's going to have to hit. And when the ball screen's pulled out deeper, as sometimes is the NBA, and the drop coverage means you can shoot from NBA 3, he's at least going to have to be serviceable from there.
No, I agree with that. I have him as a top 35 guy right now.
Yeah.
I think that he is a real, like, this guy could be a first-round pick kind of guy. Very, very gifted with ball in hand. The thing that I texted you about was watching that Alabama-Mississippi State game. Like, Alabama is a team that consistently dictates tempo. Like, that's what they do. That is, they speed things up. They try and, like, get going a million miles an hour. And look, that's a brand of basketball that Iverson Molinar is just very comfortable with, right? But, man, he completely dictated the tempo of that game, I thought. When he wanted to go up tempo and get downhill and get to the basket, he was able to do that. When he wanted to slow the game down and run ball screen after ball screen and try and get to the lane and get his guys involved, he did that too. That's what I was most impressed with. I was most impressed with the way that he controlled the tempo of the game against a team that typically is well known for controlling the tempo of the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Penny. Movies. Have you watched any this week?
I have. I had more written down. I don't remember in front of me. One I did watch. Actually, you know what? No, I watched two. What was our movie with Olivia Colman? The Lost Daughter?
Yeah.
So I watched The Lost Daughter. Very art house. Not my style. I appreciated the acting. I appreciated the slow build of the story, but I was also like, can we get to it? And that's just my like anxiety and let's get the story going. And then sort of a wild
that ending. Movie probably also hits different when you have kids.
Oh yeah, I almost swore, but yeah, it does. It's just very different. And then the other one that I watched was The Tender Bar with Ben Affleck.
Oh, how is it?
He was really good. He was the movie is sort of like a, I don't want to say poor man's, but has a lot of spin-off of Good Will Hunting type influences, you know, to the point where you see it building at the end, like, they're not going to do this, are they? And they do it. And then just to bring you into my mass hole world, so I got a haircut today before the show, hours before the show, and I'm talking to my barber, and he's cutting someone's hair. He's like, yeah, you know, that movie, he's talking about the neighborhood I live in, and the movie stars are kind of like pop up around. He's like, you know that movie with Ben Affleck when he's a bartender? I'm like, yeah, I just watched it last week. Like, oh yeah, they filmed it over in Watertown, just a street over. They're at Bemis Park, and I'm like, oh my god, like this is so like Bostonian, where they filmed it at like the rec field that's like 5 minutes from my house. So I'm gonna have to like go back and see some landmarks. But that's what it is. You see the stereotypes on TV of Dunkin' Donuts and Ben Affleck walking around, and I guess that's kind of what we're doing here.
That's your life.
That's it.
So because of my 10-hour Yellow Jackets binge, I only watched one movie this week since we've last talked.
Wow.
I saw Matrix Resurrections.
I saw that, yeah. What was our review? In theater, right?
No, we decided not to. We only had like 3 days left. So for people who, I texted Penny this, but Matrix is my wife Laura's favorite movie. So our plan was, in terms of why we didn't go see it or immediately upon Christmas was, you know, we have been busy, but we also wanted to see it in a theater because it, like, the Matrix franchise matters as much as it does the Laura. Right. We ended up just running out of time. Like, we had 4 days left on the HBO Max thing, and we were like, okay, so we need to just watch this and make sure we see it while it's available. I loved it. I liked it a lot. I loved the swing. Like, it is, from an intellectual standpoint, like, and in terms of, like, engaging with the world in the wake of, like, what the franchise has brought previously, right? Like, the way that the Matrix and, like, red pilling has completely become antithetical to what, like, you know, the Wachowskis initially wanted it to be and thought it would mean, in the way that the internet has just, like, kind of co-opted it. I thought that on an intellectual level, the Matrix Resurrections is the riskiest, biggest swing I've ever seen a franchise movie take.
Really?
It is...
Riskiest swing?
It is a crazy swing. Like, that is... That movie is insane.
Oh, it's insane. Like,
it's completely crazy. There's no way that movie should work. There is no way that movie should work.
I guess my defense, I didn't think that any of the first one should work, and they did. You kind of just like have this like, okay, we're in a matrix. There's a bunch of numbers everywhere. It puts it together. They do a good job piecing it together. But I kind of go into watching those movies with some level of expected absurdity that I'm not like completely shocked when it gets way out there.
Yeah. This one particularly, like, it gets very meta. It gets very meta-textual in terms of, like, engaging with the audience regarding the Matrix itself. Like, the Matrix trilogy outside of the film, like, plotline in reality, how fans engage with the Matrix, which is, like, staggeringly weird to me. Like, it's all a choice. It's all like a swing that I can't believe actually worked on me in the way that it did.
Right. Yeah, it is. I did enjoy it. It was an experience. I watched it, I think, during COVID Christmas or when we were quarantined too. So it was, it was like a taste of the outside world. That was like even more of the outside world. It's like, maybe it's not so bad in the house for the next 7 days.
Yeah, no. I look, like, the plot stuff was fine. Like, you know, it was okay. Like, that stuff didn't go nuts for me. But the rest of it, I was like, oh, wow, this is a crazy movie. Okay, I think that's all I've got. Next week, like, Yellow Jackets for 90 minutes.
That's fine. We can do that.
In, like, 10 minutes of basketball. We'll see. We'll see where you get to on it and how you enjoy it near the end.
I do. I have Yellow Jackets. Then I have a huge basketball swing here this week that I'm excited to embark on. So I'm going to, in person, I'm going to see the G League Ignite on Friday night versus the College Park Skyhawks. And then I'm going to go to Auburn, Kentucky. And then I'm going to go to Overtime Elite. So I'm checking all the boxes. I want to see some of these guys in person here. So I'll come back with a backpack full of content, hopefully, on some guys.
Yeah, we're coming back with tape. We're coming back with a whole lot. We're coming back with a whole lot of excitement here from Penny. Yeah. So, Penny, tell the people where they can find you. Tell the people what's going on in your life. Tell the people everything you need to know.
What's going on in my life? My son turned 3, so that was great. We went to Legoland this week. Shout out Avery Penny. What up, bro?
King.
Which is awesome because he's 3 and it's like you can go down the toy aisles and actually like buy stuff and not be a weirdo. I bought him the T-Rex and the Jeep from Jurassic Park. Great parent doing that at 3 years old, so he's psyched. So that's for him. I'm also on Twitter.
So will that involve you, like, building that with him?
Oh, no. No.
Or I mostly mean, just you?
It's already built. I mean, you know, we get the Jeep here, so that's built. And, the dinosaur here. This is the studio. Just explore the space. Yeah, we're off the rails. No, it's already built. So he was psyched. We also mix in some Paw Patrol, so don't go nuts. I'm also in Boston, as I told you, but Affleck is down the street having his Dunkin' Donuts. And in the Matrix world, the internet world, I'm on Twitter, Matt_Penny. Keep sending in the mailbag questions. We got a kick out of them. Sam sent me one before that we didn't cover, which was, what's the worst movie you've ever seen?
I think that's a good way to end.
What's the worst movie you've ever seen?
From, I think Simon Rath sent that in. It's so hard. Like, because
you've seen so many movies, so I don't even know what the worst one is.
Yeah. Like, in the last year, the worst movie I've seen is Chaos Walking, that, like, Tom Holland, Daisy Ridley movie that got held for, like, 3 years. Like, it was... I understand why they held it. Like, there were probably, like, agencies, like, trying to stop that movie from getting shown because of how big of a nightmare it was. Like, it was not good. It was really, really bad. It looked like a attempt to start, like, some sort of franchise, and it just totally fell flat on its face. That look, I see, like, a lot of really bad, like, horror movies, too. Like, yeah. I watched...
Yeah, I couldn't even, like, tell you some of the names of them on Netflix where you watch for... I feel like you finished the movie, like, after about 40 minutes, it stinks. I'm like, I can't do this. I got other stuff to do today.
Laura and I watched a movie called Hide and Seek with Jonathan Rhys-Meyers Joe Pantoliano.
Well, I didn't watch it, but I saw the preview, so that's not it.
Yeah, on Amazon Prime. We turned it off after 20 minutes.
Wow.
Like, it was... It just wasn't even, like, a functional movie. So, like, there are movies... Like, even from, like, a structural standpoint, from a filmmaking standpoint, like, it just was not even a movie that, like, worked on any level. So, like, look, I see movies like that. But, like, in terms of a bigger, you know, like, movie that had actual stars, actual investment in it... I would say Chaos Walking in the last year is the worst movie I've seen. So, Penny, what is the worst movie you've ever seen?
Oh, man. Keep it with Ben Affleck. Maybe Gigli. I don't know. It's got to be some sequel that, like, didn't have to be made.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like Dumb and Dumber or something along those lines where it's like, just leave the classics alone.
I don't know if this is the worst movie I've ever seen, but, like... The Alice in Wonderland movie with, like, Johnny Depp, that was really bad.
That was weird.
Yeah, it just, like, looked really bad. Like, that was, like, it didn't even, like, you would think that, like, a movie like that would look, like, really cool and colorful, but, like, it just, like, I don't know if the CGI just, like, failed. Like, I just thought it looked like shit.
They ran out. Well, that's what I appreciate as I circle back always to Jurassic Park. That came out in, like, 92 and looked really real. Like, sometimes you look back and say, that's kind of crummy. It didn't look right. That one actually holds up in a good sense.
Yeah. Okay. This is the Game Theory Podcast. Go subscribe to the YouTube channel. Go subscribe to the podcast on the myriad platforms that you can get the podcast. Apple, Spotify, Google Play, wherever. We'll be back this week. I'll have some sort of NBA podcast on Friday or so. Just haven't gotten to scheduling it yet because I've had a lot going on. I was not feeling super well yesterday. I had to do, like, a COVID test and all that stuff. I'm negative.
Yay.
Thank you. Lord.
Yeah. It's not whatever. Fun. Not fun.
yeah. Whatever. No. Yeah. No.
We're open. No COVID here. Christmas. Spiritual. No COVID Christmas
over here. So I'm still working on a few different things for writing this week as well. So until next time, we will talk soon.